What book is in your beach bag this weekend, and what would you like to recommend? As the summer gets underway, John Grisham's latest, Camino Island, sits atop the New York Times hardcover bestseller list. Margaret Atwood's The Handmaid's Tale has topped the paperback list for 19 weeks. What do you like to read in the summertime? Thrillers or dystopian fiction? Are you looking for something funnier or frothier for the summer, or the opposite? Something that makes you think. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we come together and share ideas for great summer reads for both adults and kids. We're joined by three of Maine's most avid readers, the director of the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance, Josh Bodwell, best-selling and award-winning author Monica Wood, and 2016 Maine Teacher of the Year, Talia Edlund. What's in your book bag? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Would you like to live longer? Well, stay tuned to today's show, and you very well may, because today's show is all about books and what to read this summer. And our producer, Jonathan Smith, found a Yale University study that says there is a correlation between reading and a longer lifespan. So grab a pen and a piece of paper and get ready to add to your reading list. Joining me today, Monica Wood. She is the author of When We Were the Kennedys, a memoir from Mexico, Maine, and the novel Any Bitter Thing, which was a national bestseller. Her other fiction includes Ernie's Ark and My Only Story, and her most recent book is The One in a Million Boy. Talia Edlund was the 2016 Maine Teacher of the Year. She currently teaches fifth grade at Cape Elizabeth Middle School, and Joshua Bodwell is Executive Director of the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance. As always, we want to hear from you, and especially today, which book or books have you read this year that you would like to share with others? Or what are you most looking forward to curling up with over the summer months? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. I'm going to try my best during the program to jot down the names of all the books, but we also recommend that you post things you're very excited about on our Facebook page in case I miss them. So, Josh, we're going to start with you because the Maine Literary Award winners are always so interesting, always such tough competition. That is already on our Maine Calling Facebook page, the list of winners. But why don't we start with the award for fiction? This is an award that has been won by Monica Wood, Richard Russo, you know, some pretty big names.
Mm-hmm. And every year it seems like we have reached the ceiling of submissions, yet there are more and more books. There were, I want to say, over 150 books this year submitted across the categories. But
wow.
The winner of fiction was Justin Tusing for Vexation Lullaby, his second book. And Justin is known locally as the leader of the Stone Coast MFA program over at USM. So he avoided the sophomore jinx.
This one's as good, better?
Saying better, yeah. I think a little bit more. His first book was really well reviewed critically, but much quieter. And there's a lot of excitement around this. He wrote song lyrics for the character within the book. There's a lot of interesting stuff happening.
Oh, wow. And again, the whole list is on our Facebook page, but the crime fiction book award to our friend, Maine Calling friend, Jerry Boyle.
It's sort of the opposite end of the spectrum with Justin in that Jerry published his first book, I think, 25 years ago. So it's really exciting for him to have his first win in crime fiction, you know, a quarter of a century later.
Talia, welcome to Maine Calling. We heard from you on the phone last week, but now you're in the studio talking about your favorite topic, children's books. What are you really excited about right now? What are you handing to your students as they leave for the summer?
Well, one of the things that I talk about with my students all year long is making sure that they seek out books with characters whose lives or backgrounds might be different than their own. I think that as teachers and adults, we have a responsibility to help kids think about what other people's lives might be like. And so for us here in Maine, a lot of times that means reading books with characters who are diverse and who come from different backgrounds or maybe speak a different language at home. And so there are a lot of resources now going around on the internet that can lead you towards books like that. But some of the books that I've been putting in my students' hands all year long, and especially for the summer, are books with characters who reflect a lot of diversity.
Can you give us a couple titles?
Sure, absolutely. So a book I just finished is a book that I think one of your guests last week spoke about, Ghost by Jason Reynolds. I called in and talked about Full Cicada Moon. I finished a book called Finding Someplace, and that is a book about a little girl who survives Hurricane Katrina. And another one that I really love is Inside Out and Back Again by Tana Lai.
Monica, whenever I see you, you're carrying a bag of books.
That is true.
So what has stood out to you? What are you just dying to recommend to friends?
Well, first of all, I'm very honored to be here with the Teacher of the Year.
Yeah.
I truly am. You. I think there's a special throne in heaven, especially for middle school teachers. So your reward will come eventually. So my list, I put short, medium, and long. So I was going to go highbrow, middlebrow, lowbrow, but I thought that was just a little too much.
I love that you put them into categories. Okay.
I did. So for short, it's one I haven't read yet, but I'm really looking forward to it. It doesn't come out until next week. It's called The Girl of the Lake by Bill Rohrbach, who is our main writer. And he is one of our best short story writers by far. And I love short stories in the summertime because you can polish off a couple of wonderful tales while sitting on the porch with an iced tea or a white wine, and you feel both enlightened and relaxed. So I think short stories in the summer are just fantastic. The medium list, one of them I have, is I just finished this last week and I was blown away. Another main writer, Christina Baker Klein, whose Orphan Train was a runaway mega bestseller. This one is called A Piece of the World. It's a novel that very closely is based on the life of Christina Olson, who was the model for Andrew Wyeth's iconic painting, Christina's World. It's absorbing, enlightening, absolutely gorgeously written. It coincides also with a lot of hoopla around Wyeth's, is it the 100th birthday celebration or something?
Yeah.
And they're doing all of these things. So I think it has that extra bit of topicality just by coincidence. So that's kind of neat. I highly recommend that. And then for long, I read murder mysteries in the summertime. I just absolutely love to just escape. And this one is called Magpie Murders by Anthony Horowitz. It's a big mega bestseller right now, and I can see why. So here's the summary. It's I'm not going to say too much because it's so – have you read it, Josh?
No, but he wrote Foyle's War.
Exactly, yes. So it's a very clever, possibly a little too clever for some people, but it's a whodunit within a whodunit. So it begins with an editor preparing to read the 9th and final installment of one of her best-selling author's mystery series. So we, along with her, are now beginning to read this manuscript, which is only – it hasn't been published yet. She's just editing it. And it's a classic Agatha Christie-style whodunit. And it, in itself, it's really riveting and fun. But far along into this novel within the novel that we're reading, we discover a present-time crime that has all kinds of echoes of and connections to the manuscript the editor is reading. So it's complicated. It's really fun. And if you like puzzle mysteries and you've got a lot of time, it'd be perfect for a rainy week at camp.
Okay.
Yeah.
How, when you say long, how long?
Well, not like 800 pages, but, you know, probably four something.
Okay.
It's long for a murder
not
mystery.
Too intimidating.
It's
no.
long, not Russian long.
Exactly.
So, Josh, really, we ought to at some point invite your daughter, Ilona, who is possibly the only person I know who reads more than you, and Monica does, and she's 14 now?
She is now 14, yeah.
What would she be recommending if she were sitting here?
Well, she was just reminded. We just had a visit last week from Miley Malloy, the novelist and short story writer, who I adore. But Ilona read all of her YA books, the Apothecary series, three of them. So it was really nice to have a sort of author that father and daughter could share. So she was sort of reinvigorated to reread some of Miley's work.
So tell us about the Apothecary series.
Very briefly, so let's see, they take place in England. A girl comes from L.A. to England around World War II. Miley had a great line when she was talking about it. She used this device in her new novel, Do Not Become Alarmed, where she said she realized in writing those YA books she had to quickly get the parents off the page. kids had to be, you know, solving all of the problems themselves. So in her new novel, Do Not Become Alarmed, you get the parents' side, but she separates the kids from the parents immediately in the beginning of the book. So we sort of track their parallel crises. But it was really amazing. So her reading has been down the past month, studying for finals at the end of freshman year. But I was just trying not to weep when she came home a few weeks ago and said, do you know this book, Papa? And it was a book from the 70s of poetry by Diane Wachowski, published by Black Sparrow Press.
Oh, my gosh. And wow.
It's what she bought at a used bookstore when she was there herself.
You are very proud. Well, let's talk about this idea of quickly getting the parents off the page. Tully, why is this the case? What's wrong with us parents?
I've actually had this exact discussion with my students. One of my students in the fall asked me, why are all their parents gone? And so we thought about what that might be. And we came up with the idea that no good parent or parent that you can root for or support is going to allow children to do something really interesting in a book if they are involved in the child's life. So the author either has to quickly make the parents disappear or kill them off. And then the child can have all kinds of adventures. And if you think about the most iconic children's characters, like Harry Potter even, I mean, the parents are gone. Otherwise, I mean, who would let their child do such things?
Sure, it's been a long time since I read Harriet the Spy, but I'm pretty certain her parents didn't know she was spying on all her neighbors.
Exactly.
That fits right into it. Okay, so we're going to start with the calls because they're already coming in. This is Jamie calling from Rochester, Massachusetts. Jamie, I understand you are the subject of a new book that you'd like to talk about.
Yes, I am. Thank you for having my call.
Go ahead and tell us about it.
Well, if your listeners have read Tracy Kidder's Among School Children, Meredith O'Brien followed my middle school jazz band for a year after one of the band members tragically passed away suddenly the year before. And Meredith wanted to find out how the power of music can help children process grief and come together as a community.
Wow. And what's the book called?
It's called Mr. Clark's Big Band, which is a little odd for me to call in and talk about a book that I'm in the title of. But it's more about the kids and the journey and the power of music.
And do you feel as though she captured it?
I do. It's, you know, because each, and congratulations, Taylor, for Teacher of the Year. Bravo. But being within a classroom is hard to kind of explain to other people. So since Meredith was there for every rehearsal throughout the whole year, she really was able to capture the relationship between the kids and me getting along with them and all of us helping each other processing Eric's death.
Oh, well, Jamie, thank you so much for calling in. And again, the book is Mr. Clark's Big Band, written by Meredith O'Brien. And we will put that on the list that we are composing as we speak on the Main Calling Facebook page. Tully, does that remind you of any other books that follow, real stories of kids dealing with something really tough?
Absolutely. One of the books that I read, and I would say that I would agree also, The Power of Music, has all kinds of potential. For example, my students often, who tend to be reluctant writers themselves, suddenly become very fluent writers if they put a pair of headphones on and listen to some kind of music. But what I was saying about a book that rings a bell for me is this story called Home of the Brave. And it is a story of a young man based off of the Lost Boys of Sudan who came over to Minnesota. And just his acclimation and adjustment to living in a new country. And one of the descriptions or lines in the book that comes back throughout the text that my students just thought was amazing and they loved was that he called the airplane that he arrived to the United States in a flying boat because he had never thought something like that could take people up in the sky could exist.
Mm. Monica, I know that you are a sports fan, a football fan, as well as a mystery fan. So are there any good sports books you'd like to recommend for summer reads? Or have you been busy with fiction lately? Which is okay.
Yeah, I can't think of any good sports books coming out now.
Okay. We have a Facebook post from Susan. Just finished reading The Sixth Extinction by Elizabeth Colbert. I'm reading World Without Ice by Henry Pollack.
Oh, You must be so depressed. Oh, my God. The Sixth Extinction is the most depressing book I have ever read. I mean, it's really about we're all doomed. I mean, we are. So it doesn't strike me as a great summer book, but
but an important book.
Definitely an important book. And she's a very good writer. It's a good, important, sobering book.
Also on Facebook from Jean, a man called Ova, I loved the movie. And my son, who's 19, said the book is even funnier. Mm.
The book is fantastic. Yeah. It's a little bit corny. It gets a little sentimental at the end. But at that point, you're so invested, you don't really care. It's a really sweet story.
Also on Facebook from Bonnie, Paul Dworin's Knife Creek. He's also a Maine author as a friend of the program.
Yes.
What would you like to say about Paul?
Paul won the inaugural Crime Fiction Award, the Maine Literary Awards.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, with his first book, The Poacher's Son.
That Knife Creek is on my list. I love that series a lot.
Your list of things to read?
Things to read. It just came out like just a few days ago.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And from Becky, Hillbilly Elegy by J.D. Vance, which... have you all read that?
In my summer stack.
Me too.
I have not read that.
It's been on my list
in my
stack.
Yeah. Okay, so how many books are on your stack, Josh? This is going to make me feel less bad about how many are on mine.
I have to be careful. My partner Tammy's going to call in and complain about the... she says
Same
the books
here.
Are holding up the wall at this
yes.
point.
Okay, so there's not a stack.
No, there's a stack beside the couch. There's a stack beside the bed. There's a stack beside the dresser.
Yeah. I've actually limited my stacks always to only five, because if I go more than five, then I don't read any of them and I just go for a magazine. So I always have five in my stack, and once one is gone, another one gets replaced.
I have a new rule in my house. A book comes in, a book has to go out.
Oh.
And that's hard.
And how long have you had this rule, Monica? And how well are you sticking with it?
I stick with it fairly well. I buy a lot of books just to kind of keep the economy in our town going, and we're lucky to have so many places to buy books in this town. But yeah, I know I stick to it. So I buy a book and then I either give it away or let somebody else, you know, have it, or I don't have the room anymore. So
I go to the library a lot, and I would buy the books. However, my husband brings so many books into the house that he actually is constantly building more bookshelves so that we can accommodate all of his books. And he will occasionally purge, but what I find he does is purge the books that belong to me and not him.
Yes. So is he listening right now? Is he going to call
yes,
and push
I hope
back?
He is.
I don't know if this is pointing up something about gender, but I have way more in common with your husband and none of your restraint, either of you.
Right, yeah. You know, that does remind me, though, of one of my all-time favorite books. It's a little slim book of essays by Anne Fadiman. And it's called Ex Libris. I give it as a gift a lot. And the first essay in it is about moving in with her husband and what she calls marrying their book collection. And so they decided like whose copy of Catcher in the Rye stays and whose goes. And one of them was annotated by the high school, you know, the high school version of the, I think it was her. So that one stayed. Or it depends on who gave it or who... But she felt really, truly married after they had finally purged their collection and made it into one.
It's a very delicate negotiation, I can say from experience.
And one of my negotiations is which book go in the bookcases in the living room. My husband thinks ratty paperbacks are just fine there.
Oh.
And I just gave up.
So you're encouraging him to replace those with signed first editions? Or?
No, just something that's
something
relatively
that
attractive.
Decent.
It really doesn't even have to be hardcover, but you know, not torn would be good. Okay, so we're going to talk more about your recommendations for best summer reads. 1-800-399-3566. 1-800-399-3566. You can email talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Nome Landscapes, dedicated to enhancing outdoor living in Maine with installation, design, masonry, and maintenance. NomeLandscapes.com. And by the Maine Health Cancer Care Network, assembled with one simple mission, to provide Mainers with a relentless partner in their fight to overcome this disease right here at home.
This week's On the Media, the Georgia special election attracted intense media attention, but one election analyst says that if the issue of gerrymandered districts isn't addressed, Then?
The Democrats just spent $30 million on a Band-Aid when they are bleeding out at the national level.
Don't miss this week's On the Media from WNYC.
And you can hear that program Saturday afternoon at 3 p.m.
We're living at a time when unlimited access to information means finding the truth should be easy, you would think.
If something fits with how we want our world to look through our rosy-colored glasses, then that information seems a bit more credible.
What's true and what's a lie? That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
And you can hear that broadcast Saturday at 1 p.m. and again Wednesday at 11 p.m.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, What to Read This Summer. With me in the studio, Talia Edlin. She was the 2016 Maine Teacher of the Year, and she currently teaches fifth grade at Cape Elizabeth Middle School. Monica Wood is the author of When We Were the Kennedys. Her most recent book is The One in a Million Boy. Josh Bodwell, Executive Director of the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. On the line with us now, Jen Waite. She is author of A Beautiful Terrible Thing, which comes out July 11th. Jen, welcome to Maine Calling.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
I understand you have a friend in the studio with us.
I do. Hi, Talia.
Hi, Jen. How are you?
Before we ask for your recommendations, tell us a little about your book.
The memoir, A Beautiful Terrible Thing, it's about the discovery that my husband and father of my newborn daughter fits the textbook definition of a psychopath. And it's told in a dual time narrative, flashing between before and after chapters, juxtaposing us falling in love and starting a family with the discovery and realization that the life I'd built for the past 5 years was pretty much a complete fiction. And I wrote it entirely in Maine, which is where I grew up. And it takes place half in New York City and half in Maine. So the subject matter sounds kind of heavy, but it actually is really like a thriller, like a domestic thriller. So a page turner, I hope.
And it's A Beautiful Terrible Thing. The author on the phone with us, Jen Waite. Jen, other than your own memoir, what books would you like to recommend?
All right. The first book that came to mind is Fingersmith by Sarah Waters. And I think anyone who's listening who has read Sarah Waters is probably like, yes, because she's just so incredible. Just
Monica smiling and nodding as you say this. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, I just randomly picked a book out of the Queen's Library where I was living at the time, and just totally random, and I've just been obsessed ever since. So for anyone who hasn't read Sarah Waters yet, I'm very envious of you, because she really has this extraordinary ability to bring you directly into the world of the story, and all of her novels are set in 19th century England, and it honestly, like, I have wondered if she has, like, a time machine that she uses to go back and write her novels in the time and place, because you truly feel like you're there, like you're not just reading, you actually feel like you're in the world. And I picked Fingersmith in particular because the plot and relationships between the characters are super intense and riveting, but really all of Waters' novels are really remarkable due to, like, that atmosphere that she creates. So just a quick synopsis is that as a 17-year-old orphan has been brought up by petty thieves on the outskirts of London, and she's sent to help a friend of her adoptive parents con a wealthy heiress out of her inheritance, and she goes to live as a lady's maid to that heiress in the English countryside, and that's when the book just gets really, really crazy, and there's a huge plot twist, which I'm not going to say to give it away, but it's just an extraordinary, extraordinary novel. The second book that I recommend, and I chose all these books because they just, like, they were the first ones that came to mind for whatever reason, and this one, The First Bad Man by Miranda July, I think the reason this book stayed with me is because it's probably the strangest book I've ever read, and I'm honestly just amazed that not only that it was published, but that this creation came out of someone's mind. It's just I don't know how else to describe it except that it's really the weirdest book I've ever read. The protagonist of the novel is named Cheryl, and she's super funny without meaning to be and just completely bizarre, and her inner life and observations of the world are utterly unique and unlike anything I've ever read. It was the kind of book that I Googled as soon as I finished it because I couldn't believe it existed, and I wanted to see how other people reacted to it. And it's interesting because it does seem like a book that polarizes people. I saw a lot of 5-star reviews and a lot of 1-star reviews, so I think that kind of speaks to how it affects people in an extreme way. And just a quick synopsis of the plot of this one is this woman, Cheryl, ends up welcoming a younger woman into her home as a house guest. And at first, the relationship between the two women is really uncomfortable and almost made me like panic for Cheryl because Lee is really physically aggressive with her, and it's like just cringeworthy. And then the relationship morphs into something else completely, and another kind of, I guess, spoiler that I'm not going to give away, but it's just a complete page-turner, and it's really strange and delightful and oddly emotional. And the third book that I recommend is one I think that probably a lot of people have heard of, or it had kind of a bit of a buzz this past year, as The Vegetarian by Han Kong. And it actually came out in South Korea many years ago, or I guess like 9 years ago, I think. And then it was first translated into English in 2016. And unlike the first two books that I just recommended, this one really is driven by plot, and that's what drew me to the book in the first place. The Vegetarian, it's about a woman who has a violent, bloody dream about the butchering of animals, although we don't actually ever really see the full dream. We kind of just see fleeting images of it, which makes it even more creepy. And after that dream, she becomes a vegetarian the next day, and that's really pretty much how the book starts. And it's told in three parts and from three different perspectives, her husband, her brother-in-law, and her sister. I don't know exactly how to categorize this book, maybe like a domestic thriller, but it's really so much more than that. It's this kind of seemingly innocuous event, a woman becoming a vegetarian, that leads to this explosive unraveling of a family. And it's kind of like a devastating exploration of a woman's agency and control over her own body and mind, or I think maybe lack thereof. So
great.
Those are my,
well,
yeah,
Jen, I will put those all on the Maine Calling Facebook page in our list. And also, I want to thank you for joining us today. Jen Waite lives in Portland, and she is the author of A Beautiful, Terrible Thing, which comes out on July 11th. Thanks, Jen. Let's see. We have so many Facebook posts and emails here. Try not to miss very many of them. If you like something on the spooky side, this is from Taryn, check out Haunted Boston by Maine-based author Taryn Plum. Among New England's many treasures is Boston, a city rich in culture and history. Haunted Boston is a collection of stories of ghosts, mysteries, and paranormal happenings from around the hub.
Oh, it sounds like fun. Mm.
So, cannot call in. This is Dave in Fort Kent. Cannot call in today, but if listeners have not discovered N. Granger, she has a small, fun series of murder mysteries based in a fictional Maine town. Check out Death in a Red Canvas Chair. Salute. And the person who sent the email, Dave, lives in Fort Kent. And then we have from Elizabeth, when discussing your summer reading selections, I hope you include Holly Chamberlain. Her latest novel will soon be released. She'll have a book signing at Longfellow Books, June 27th from 7 to 9. A wonderful person, and her books are all centered around local places. So that's Holly Chamberlain. Monica, you've got a big event coming up at the Portland Public Library that's related to Read Me?
Right, Read Me. It's a collaboration between the Maine Library Association and the Maine Humanities Council. And they asked me to pick two books to recommend for reading for the summer. And the libraries in Maine picked up all these books so that their patrons
could
borrow
extras,
them.
Yeah.
And they're having book discussions around them. And I chose one fiction and one nonfiction. The fiction I chose is Unknown Caller by Deborah Spark, who is a Maine writer. She teaches at Colby and lives in North Yarmouth. The novel is told in reverse time. And it's about a married couple with one kid who discover that the husband has a teenage daughter from a previous relationship. And from there, the narrative just goes back in time, each chapter moving us farther into the past, which sounds like the opposite of what you want in a book. You know, you want forward motion and a lot of suspense and tension. And all I can say is she is such a good writer that you are completely riveted as you're going into the past. It's beautifully written. And one of the things I love about Deborah's writing in general, and this one in particular, is she has so many insights about family and marriage and parenthood that you just kind of stop in your tracks and read it over again. She's really something. She's one of my favorite writers. And then the other one I chose for nonfiction, and this was on my short list for today, my short books list as opposed to medium and long, is The Moth Anthology. And there's two out. There's a new one out now, but this is the first one I'm talking about. And The Moth is it's the Moth Radio Hour, which is a public radio show, and they're done live with live audiences, and it's regular, some famous people, but mostly regular people telling stories that are true from their lives. They do them with no notes. Well, finally, they were collected in this anthology, and they're written down, and they're short, they're interesting, they're all engaging.
When you say they're written down, are they transcribed?
They're transcribed.
So isn't that interesting? So something that someone said without notes, mm-hmm. something that the whole idea is not to be scripted,
right,
ends up being very good on the printed page.
It is. I don't know if they did some editing, or they probably did some, but they're such amazing stories. There's one about this told by this famous black rap artist who becomes completely obsessed with the whitest song of the whitest songwriter you could imagine. There's another one about a first day on the job orderly who's just getting out of rehab, and this is his first real job, and he gets stuck in an elevator with a dying patient. They're really amazing stories from real people, and I find them so engaging.
Well, that's going on the list as well. We have an email from Martha. Don't forget Melissa Sweet's great new illustrated children's biography of E.B. White, Some Writer. It is a must read for both adults and children, third grade on up.
It is a beautiful book.
I love it.
From Nancy, an email, Commonwealth by Ann Patchett.
I haven't read that one yet, but it's definitely on my list.
It's on the stack. It's actually, to go back to that Miley Malloy book, she and Ann are close friends, and they both talked about writing books with children in peril. Mm-hmm. And Ann wrote Commonwealth, and Miley wrote Do Not Become Alarmed. So they're sort of sister books in a way, completely different.
From Rob on Facebook, Dreamland by Sam Quinones is a good nonfiction account of the origins of the opiate drug crisis. Due to the combination of cheap Mexican heroin, changing perceptions of pain management by medical professionals, and the heavy-handed marketing of powerful opiate medications by pharmaceutical companies. Fascinating, although it gets a little redundant, very thought-provoking. So if you'd like to join the conversation, our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling. You can give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do InSource Renewables, committed to reducing solar costs in partnership with Solarize MidMaine. Learn more at solarizemidmaine.com. And by Bohan Mathers, committed to helping Maine entrepreneurs secure their patents and trademarks. Learn more at bohanmathers.com.
I'm Bill Littlefield. The most popular character in the history of sports video games may be a fictional Spanish-speaking little leaguer.
Pablo is like Babe Ruth crossed with Mike Trout, crossed with Sandy Koufax.
But crossed with, like, all the pudgy kids that you grew up with.
The origin of backyard baseball's Pablo Sanchez coming up this week on Only a Game. Join us.
Join us for Only a Game Saturday morning at 7 a.m.
A controversial plan in Boston is aimed at giving opioid addicts a safe place to use drugs.
People are already injecting publicly all over the place. We all know that. It's right. Just not supervised. There's no people making sure folks aren't dying.
On Next, from the New England News Collaborative, we'll listen to the debate over that plan and go to ground zero of a border war between New England states over gambling and tourism. Please join us.
Stay with us this afternoon. Next is coming up shortly at 2 p.m.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling today in the program, Additions to Your Summer Reading List, How to Make Your Stack Even Higher. With me in the studio, Josh Baldwell, Executive Director of the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance. Talia Edlin, the 2016 Maine Teacher of the Year, who teaches fifth grade at Cape Elizabeth Middle School. Monica Wood, a best-selling author, her most recent book, The One in a Million Boy. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. 1-800-399-3566. Josh, some very well-known Maine authors, both with the first name Richard, have come out with some pretty well-regarded books as well. We haven't talked about those yet.
Yeah. Well, to start, I'll echo Monica's idea about short stories in the summer. They're good every season, but
they are.
They're especially good in the summer. I was just saying earlier that I picked up Richard Russo's new book, Trajectory, thinking I would It's four long stories, thinking I would just read the two I hadn't read that had never appeared previously. And I devoured those, and I just kept going and reread the other two that I'd already read. He's just he's a master at this point. I mean, they're effortless and amazing and engaging. The other Richard in Maine, the other Pulitzer Prize-winning Richard in Maine, Richard Ford, has a very different book for him, his first book of long nonfiction, Between Them. I know you had Richard in the studio and discussed this.
And you just interviewed him on stage the other night, didn't you?
Yep, yeah. The last event of his book tour. A slim, what Cheryl Strayed called it, a novella memoir. It's two very, very long novellas, one about his mother and one about his father. Probably the most tender book he's ever written, searching, longing, beautiful, full of investigating his parents and the ways he didn't know them and the way he misses them and wants to know them.
This is nonfiction?
Nonfiction.
Wow.
Yeah. And I want to mention one other short story collection from a Maine writer this summer, Ann Beatty. Her 20th book, The Accomplished Guest.
That's right on the top of my reading stack right now.
It just, 20 books in and how Ann just continues to be startling on every page. Such an original thinker.
So you just now have to solve the problem of how many hours in a day and how many hours of sleep we all need. We're going to go to China, Maine, and Tony. Hi, Tony. Go ahead.
Yes. I have a nonfiction recommendation and a fiction recommendation, too. But my nonfiction recommendation would be Uncle Tungsten by Oliver Sacks, which is basically his childhood account of an uncle that got him interested in chemistry. Hmm. And I can't wait to start it, honestly. And because I just read On the Move, which is his autobiography, which was mind-blowing. And I didn't realize that he was the man that the movie Awakenings was based on. I think he actually wrote a book in the 70s. And then my fiction recommendation is by an author named Jim McDaniel, called An Unattractive Vampire. Is a kind of a funny horror story about a 300-year-old vampire in Massachusetts who wakes up in modern day and is confronted with the fact that vampires are no longer monsters, but attractive, suave, nice guys.
That sounds fun. Thanks for your recommendations, Tony.
You're welcome.
Moving to John in Windham. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Hi there. So I'd just like to throw out a quick recommendation for the short story collection, 20th Century Ghost, Ghost by Joe Hill, or I guess now he goes by Joe King. I think it's just a really interesting throwback to Maine's horror traditions, and the short stories in it are just, like, incredible. I think they're really masterfully written, so I'd definitely recommend that.
John, thanks so much.
Short story collection.
Yeah, 20th Century Ghost by Joe Hill or Joe King.
Stephen's son.
Right.
Yeah.
And he has been a guest on Maine Calling. Thank you, John, for your recommendation. Going to Peter now. Hi, Peter. Go ahead.
Hi. This is Peter Blatchley, and I just want to let you folks know that Cundy's Harbor is celebrating the 57th anniversary of their tiny, tiny little library.
Aww.
And they've asked me to, it's tomorrow, Saturday at 2 o'clock, and they've asked me to read from my book, which I think is perfect summer reading. It's called The Stone from Halfway Rock, and it's about my childhood adventures growing up on the coast of Maine.
Oh.
which were quite fun. And they talk about easy reading. Josh was talking about short stories ideal. These are vignettes, basically. Each chapter is its own story.
You said the stone from Halfway Rock?
It's the stone from Halfway Rock.
Okay, got it.
And it's based on my sailing trip out there to Halfway Rock when I was 10 years old in a 10-foot plywood sailboat. So,
well, thank you, Peter, and have fun at the reading. Thanks for calling.
I hope to see you there. Thanks, Jennifer. Okay, bye-bye.
We'll go to Wolfboro, New Hampshire, and Warren. Hi, Warren, go ahead.
Hey, I have read one of the strangest books I think anyone has ever written. It is called The Ninth Life of Lewis Drax, D-R-A-X. The author is Liz Jensen. And I just read you a little bit, the opening paragraph. I'm not most kids. I'm Louis Drax. Stuff happens to me. Didn't happen. Like going on a picnic where you drown. Just ask my mama what it's like being the mother of an accident-prone boy. And she'll tell you, no fun. You can't sleep wondering where it's going to end. You see danger everywhere and you think, got to protect him, got to protect him. But sometimes you can't.
Warren, is this a book for adults or for kids or for everybody?
I would not recommend it for a child. But it is very strange. It is set in France. I understand the author is Danish. But it involves deaths and a serious medical condition. And there's some sex stuff in it that I wouldn't recommend for kids.
Okay, Warren, thanks for your call.
And it's a very good book.
It's going to go on the list. I really appreciate you calling in. We have from Molly on Facebook, please ask Josh and Monica to talk about telling room books for middle and high school readers this summer. More awesome local authors. Thank you.
Recommendations for it?
Well, this Facebook post is from Molly, and it's about the telling room books.
Well, one thing I definitely want to say about the telling room, to circle back to the Maine Literary Awards, is that each year there's always these interesting firsts, whether it's a win by a debut author, or this year we had our first tie ever in nonfiction. Both Colin Woodard and Caitlin Shetterly tied. And in the youth fiction category, there's always three finalists' name, but when the judges are reading these manuscripts, there are just numbers on them. They don't know who the authors are. And Maddie Curtis, a telling room student, was all three finalists. It's the first time we've ever had a student run the category.
Wow. Mm. Well, the telling room kids always do well in those competitions because they're so well coached and So, but I think what Molly's talking about is the anthologies that they produce,
and,
right?
And Molly has Maddie Curtis actually has a collection of these short stories too that the Telling Room has produced, and the name is escaping me. But hopefully, Molly can put it on Facebook.
Yeah. The Telling Room has such interesting offerings for the summer too for kids. Mm-hmm. And my own child has worked with one of the teachers from the Telling Room, John Holdridge, and he wrote this poem. And I said to his classroom teacher, I know that my son didn't write that. I know John helped him write that. And she said, no, actually, John didn't help him at all. But I couldn't believe the words that my son had in him.
Yeah. Mm.
We'll go quickly to Margie in Brunswick. Hi, Margie. Go ahead.
Hi. I get tongue-tied. I'm recommending one today, which is the inaugural poem for President Barack Obama's inauguration by Richard Blanco. And Richard lives in Maine, and he's a Cuban American, and it's illustrated by Dave Pilkey, and the illustrations are so beautiful. And I think it's a book that, you know, both children and adults would love. You know, because it's such a special poem. And it really talks about what America is.
Margie, thanks so much for calling and recommending that. We've had Richard Blanco on this program. We've been lucky enough to, and he is just as charming and wonderful in real life as his writing.
That poem is a great anecdote when you're really feeling down after being on social media. Just pick that up and read a few stanzas.
So beautiful, and he's such a sweetheart.
So very quickly, Philip, we just have a few seconds left. Can you give us one or two recommendations, okay, Philip, on Mount Desert Island?
Too quickly, very popular book now, A Gentleman in Moscow, which is just a phenomenal read. And then a Maine based author, David Rosenfeld, who's a high school friend of mine, and writes books about a young attorney from our hometown, Paterson, New Jersey. They're all about dogs, and it's great dialogue, just very, very funny. The first of them was Open and Shut. I would highly recommend David Rosenfeld.
Great. Thanks for your call, and they're on the list. Thank you, Philip. And that's going to be it. We're out of time.
Rats.
Thank you, all three of you. Monica Wood, the author of When We Were the Kennedys, and many other books. Ernie's Ark, her most recent book, is One in a Million Boy. Talia Edlund was the 2016 Maine Teacher of the Year. She currently teaches fifth grade at Cape Elizabeth Middle School. And Joshua Bodwell, the executive director of the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance. I'm going to do my best to get this list on the Maine Calling Facebook page. George Thomas ran the board today. The show's produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.